This is Scott, and you are listening to Fine Tune You with Helen, your home for holistically balanced living. Find us at www.finetuneyou.com and enjoy helpful, inspiring, and amusing information. Besides practicing holistic self-development disciplines for over 40 years, additional formal studies have deepened her knowledge and qualifications. Helen is an intuitive counselor, transformational coach, and guided imagery expert. As a graduate of the American Institute of Holistic Theology, Helen has her master's degree in metaphysics and is working toward her doctorate in metaphysics and holistic ministries.
Welcome, everyone. This is Sunday's Fine Tune You, your home for living holistically in a messy life. We're on BBS Radio Station 1, live at 6 p.m. on the West Coast and 9 p.m. on the East Coast. Tonight's guest will be Dr. Barry Sultanoff, author of Putting Out the Fire of Addiction, A Holistic Guide to Recovery, an international speaker, avid amateur photographer, tango dancer, and yogi. Fine Tune You's Saturday show is on BBS Radio Station 1 at 10 p.m. East Coast, 1 a.m. East Coast. On this show, we discuss the tools we need to increase holistic balance. During this hour, we will dig deep, ask questions, and make observations. I want to know what you want to hear. I want to know how you are living fine-tuned. I want to keep it real. Fine Tune You's goal is to help all of us include holistic truths into every aspect of our messy lives, encouraging you to ask, how am I including the truths of the universe into my life? If you'd like to contact me and ask questions of our guest or give comments or feedback, just email helen@finetuneyou.com or call BBS Radio at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. For those who just like to listen and breathe in and embrace the sacred space of light, love, purpose, and intention, welcome. No matter where you are, no matter what you are doing, we are so glad you are with us. And because we are live, we are together right now in this wonderful time, in this present moment, in this gift to each of us. I hope you like what you hear, benefit, and feel moved to shift some of your insights or beliefs. I so look forward to our extraordinary time together. It's so good to be here and join together and to know that you are holding and I am holding. And together, we are all holding our sacred space of light, love, purpose, and intention. Fine Tune You is nothing without all of you wonderfully grounded people. And we cherish our wonderful listener base. You are the foundation of our program. I am your host, Helen Smalley Bauer, and I like to say guide or co-guide. Let's take a short commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Barry Sultanoff.
O's Acupuncture is where modern technology is blended with Eastern-style wellness. O's approach is to combine the old with the latest scientific technology. He transforms various ancient texts, then uses Hippocrates' principles to combine the best of Eastern and Western healing techniques. O provides you with the latest of modern alternatives, along with the most traditional of Eastern healing techniques. It's time to start taking care of your mind, body, and spirit. Achieve balanced health. Outlive your friends. Defy time. Change your destiny. O's, located at 8 Immortal Center, 1188 Bishop Street, Suite 2409, in beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii. Call 548-7711 to schedule your evaluation. Make an appointment today. Call 548-7711.
Welcome back. And before we begin our discussion, let's just take a minute and call our angels and the loving spirits of the universe to assemble with us. And as we open our hearts and quiet our spirits, we gather together and hold our sacred space of light, love, purpose and intention. And then get ready to laugh. Before we welcome Dr. Barry Salfanoff, let me tell you just a bit about him. He's the founding member of the American Holistic Medical Association and a charter member of the Feng Shui Guild. Dr. Salfanoff has been a columnist for Natural Health magazine as well as several other periodicals. He's co-author of Putting Out the Fire of Addiction, an amazing book about how to rise out of the ashes of addiction. Dr. Salfanoff practices whole person medicine, emphasizing the integration of body, mind, and spirit in Maui, Hawaii. Among his passions are the Argentine tango, dancing, inline skating, photography, Hatha yogurt. He's been a vegetarian since 1969 and a vegan since 2007. Welcome, Dr. B.
Well, it's very wonderful to be with you this afternoon, and what a joy to be part of your sacred space and entering into this discussion we're going to have, and, you know, sharing of our minds and hearts together. You know, the best information comes from I think having our different dimensions communicating, you know, and thank you. I feel very much at home with you this afternoon.
Thank you very much. You know, I know you were a conventional doctor. What made you decide to blend conventional medicine with holistic medicine, if I can ask?
Yes, well, it's fine to ask. I went to conventional medical training, very conventional. I was at the University of Rochester. And it's a very good school. I chose it from among several options, but conventional compared to what I see now as the, you know, the best approach to health. So truthfully, I never really practiced conventional medicine. I was early on a psychiatrist for a couple of counties in upstate New York. I was their county psychiatrist. So kind of had to straddle the conventional and the integrative medicine because I was called upon by the county to sometimes medicate people, sometimes evaluate them to see whether they should be even put into hospitals, mental hospitals, against their will. So I don't feel I ever practiced conventional medicine, but I certainly needed to integrate what I learned in a way that would be consistent with what I've come to believe is health. Really, it all emanates from source. Because you were talking about in your introduction, the more we can be at the very source of our being and connected with, you know, with what's really running this world, the better position we are to generate healthy mind, body, spirit. And I guess for me, my life is my message. So I do my very best to live these things myself. I really don't suggest much of anything to others that I don't embrace in my own lifestyle.
I agree with that 100%. So I know that when you were young, you had an addiction to nicotine. So
yes.
Were you on the side practicing holistic with nicotine, or was it after that?
Well, I started smoking cigarettes when I was 13 years old, and I continued smoking until I was 30. It's a little hard for me to realize that was more than half my life ago. But in those days, I was just desperately trying to make it through my life, which included an Ivy League college I went to starting at the age of 16. I went to Cornell, and then I went to a high-powered medical school, the University of Rochester School of Medicine. And frankly, I was using cigarettes as a crutch, as ironic as it might seem to be in, say, a medical school and to be almost a chain smoker. That's what I was doing, and many of my classmates were as well. In other words, I was just desperately trying to keep myself going. And it was only later, that I, at the age of 30, that I was able to break that addiction entirely. And at the point that I did, I never, ever even craved any cigarettes again. It was a total break with what came before. I'm happy to say, because now I have very strong aerobic capacity. I live in Hawaii. I do a lot of free diving. I can dive to at least 15 feet and swim underwater for more than a minute with no problems at all. I ran a marathon last year. So fortunately, I gave up that ridiculous and insane practice of taking nicotine and tar into my system. That was now 35 years ago.
So what prompted you to switch? What prompted you to stop?
Well, I knew. I mean, it was obvious that the part of me that was awake could see that I was destroying my health in this way. So I very much wanted to break free. But in order to break free of smoking, one has to want more to be a non-smoker than to be a smoker. You know, that the balance has to shift. And more I wanted to be a non-smoker. I was looking at the possibility of running marathons even then. And a smoker is not going to have a very good chance running a 26-mile race. In fact, it might even be dangerous, you know, to attempt that.
Right.
But most of all, it was perhaps embarrassing to look at myself as a health practitioner. You know, at that point, I was 5 years out of medical school already, and to still be addicted to nicotine. And, you know, I tell that story in the book, Putting Out the Fire of Addiction.
But I know you do. That's how I knew to ask you.
Yes, I know. So I've gone public with it. Yeah. And fortunately, I had help from some wise friends, and one of them, a biologist, put me on a formula of Bach flower remedies, you know, the flower essences. And that had the impact on my system of putting me through some rather extraordinary changes, including emotional shifts and anger and all kinds of stuff started happening. But the result of it was that I lost my taste for nicotine totally and completely. It was kind of a miracle. But I thank the wisdom of my friends and their caring about me, this one friend in particular, my friend John, for assisting me, because when you're an addict, it's very hard to do it on your own, to break out of it. And I was truly a nicotine addict.
Okay, so then you shifted, and did you stay in the Rochester area?
Yes, I remained in the Rochester area until the early 80s. I was, as I mentioned, I was working as a county psychiatrist in Wayne County, New York, and also in Canandaigua County. And I was also teaching at Brockport State University. I became more and more interested in being an educator, because as I learned things myself, for instance, as I broke through my addiction, I felt that part of what I had to offer others was my story and the inspiration that they could do the same. If I could do it, so could they. So I became a professor at Brockport State University, which is part of the SUNY system in upstate New York. And I remained there until the early 80s, at which point I moved to the Washington, D.C. area.
And then you were in Maryland, right?
Yes, in greater D.C., Maryland. Maryland is my home state. And it was then in the early 80s that I began private practice of holistic psychiatry.
Is that when you moved home?
I moved back to the area. Well, I grew up in a town called Aberdeen, Maryland, and where I ended up living when I moved back is about 60 miles from there.
Actually, that's what I really meant was, I know in your book I read that you moved your practice home. Is that when you moved your practice to your home?
Oh, my home-based practice.
Love that.
Yes. Initially, I had an office that I shared with acupuncturists in a conventional office building. But I did, after a few years, move my practice home. And that worked so, so well for me, because I was able to create sacred space in my home. And I was at home in my sacred space, and it was so much easier for me to create an environment where I could work with my clients. And they mainly came to me for psychiatric reasons, but I worked with them in a holistic manner. For instance, nutrition, stress management, different breathing techniques, many different modalities I was able to offer them.
You said you used a lot of sound.
A lot of sound?
I thought I read in your...
Oh, and sound healing as well. Yes.
Sound healing, yes.
Yeah, it's been a great interest of mine, how one can heal through sound. And currently, I'm a disc jockey on the radio in Maui. We have a wonderful not-for-profit volunteer station. So I'm able to explore what kinds of music can help people become more well, and what kinds of music it would be better for me not to put on the air, because I would just be harming people's health. So the connection between sound, music, vibration, health, all of that, very interesting to me. I have a doctor friend who plays the didgeridoo as part of his practice. You know, he does healing with the instrument.
Wow.
And it's very exciting. And he's a doctor who's in very much in practice here on Maui, and incorporates the conventional and non-conventional approaches, I think, very, very well. He's my doctor here, and I'm glad for him.
Yeah. I understand you have a book coming out about sound also, sound therapy.
No, I don't have a book coming out about this.
I'm sorry, then I messed up. My bad. So you have a CD coming out about that.
Yes, I actually released a CD. The CD has been out now for almost 10 years. I released the CD in...
Oh, I thought you had a new one coming.
2000. Well, coming. But there's a lot involved in producing a CD, as it turns out. You know, that the last one, we spent several days in a recording studio. I hired two musicians. I wrote the script for it. Not the prescription, but the script in that sense, but the script, which was really in poetic form. At heart, I'm very much a poet physician. In fact, I now have a group of poetry students I'll be meeting with again tomorrow here on Maui.
Oh, wonderful.
Sound through poetry. You know, it's all part of healing, and it seems to me that's part of what your program is about.
Correct.
You know, poetry, sound, you know, vibration, didgeridoo, you know, and then nutrition, exercise, all of it together, part of raising the consciousness so that we're really healed from within through our own raised vibration.
Are you still doing a lot of laughing therapy?
Laughing? Yes, indeed. I have a group of friends here on Maui, and we swim every day. The way we do our laughing therapy is together. It's a fairly large pod. We think of ourselves as a pod, and we swim on the north shore of Maui pretty much every day. And along the way, sometimes we stop and we just laugh. We just laugh and laugh and laugh in the water. And we kind of carry that laughter into our lives. So as we transform into people who are more available to just break out laughing, become an inspiration to others. I have a brother, Steve, for whom laughter, and he calls himself a mirthologist, but for whom laughter is an extremely important part of his therapy and what he teaches.
I saw him.
You saw him? You saw my brother, Steve?
I saw him on the web. I found him on the web.
Oh, yes. Well, he's the Humor Matters guy. My friend, I do have a famous friend, though. Many people know of Dr. Patch Adams, who's gotten a lot of publicity over the past maybe 20 years. And Patch is a close friend of mine. I went clowning in Russia in the 90s for 2 weeks. I went as a clown with a group of clowns to bring laughter and healing into the hospitals, into the orphanages, even into Red Square. We just got ridiculous.
Maybe that's why the walls came tumbling down.
You know, I would like to think so, Helen, that somehow that we, so often we do things and who knows what the effect is, right?
Right.
But I'd like to believe that there's a connection between touching hearts through laughter and people maybe letting go of what they've taken so seriously, like walls separating, you know, two parts of the city. And and so in Germany and Russia, there have been big changes since the time I was there. I never really thought of that connection. I won't take credit for it, but I love the question.
I bet it had a bearing. I know I told Laura Lee that we have a son who's medically fragile, and we try to make a rule in our house that we laugh about 30 minutes a day.
Oh.
And we do everything in our power to find ways to laugh.
Yes.
So it's just a huge part of our life.
Yes. Taking things too seriously, I think, has very deleterious effects on the heart. You know, it really creates a heaviness in the energy around the heart. And of course, I live here on a sanctuary for rescued animals, and forever laughing at their antics, Helen. It's the best laughter therapy for me is to just pick a spot and sit down and watch what's happening around me here at the farm.
Well, we only have one animal, a little puppy, and she causes us a lot of laughter too, or provides a lot of laughter, I should say.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're talking about. There's nobody that makes you laugh more than children and animals.
Right, and then we have tours here. So one of the ways, I suppose, we could frame it is that we do some laughter therapy by having people come on the tours, see the antics of the animals, and become amused by them. You know, we have roosters who like to ride the backs of goats, and we have goats who jump up on the backs of the donkeys. You wouldn't believe what goes on around here.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I grew up on a farm, so I'm actually not too surprised.
Oh, you know.
I was blessed.
It's relatively new to me, but I feel like one of the things that's keeping us young here is the connection with the animals, and then also with adults and many young children, too, who come here on tour two or three times a week, you know, to see the sanctuary and experience this side of life. Yeah.
So at this point, are you still practicing as a doctor, or are you
I've maintained my medical license. I'm a licensed MD in Hawaii at this moment, and also in the state of Maryland. And I work with people, there's a group of people I work with on the telephone who are based on the East Coast. All of them are people that when I lived in the Northeast, I sat across from, so we had sessions in person, and they've chosen to continue with me by phone.
I think phone works well.
It has worked well. There's one who occasionally comes to Hawaii and combines a vacation with some, you know, in-person sessions with me. And then I do some work here in Maui. Not a lot. Most of my work is by phone. I think of myself as a personal trainer for the mind. You know? Because people understand a personal trainer is someone you keep in your life for a period of time to coach you on how to have things work out better for you.
Absolutely correct. It's just unusual to hear a doctor say that. That's to me, that just tells me how actually huge you are in your spirit, that your spirit is just way beyond. And it made me happy. That was a happy giggle.
Oh, well, thank you for that reflection. You know, I think we need each other to see ourselves. Thanks for seeing me in a positive light, Ellen.
Oh, a huge positive light. Now, I know Maui does not have nightclubs. Where do you do your tango, or have you stopped doing the Argentine tango? And I can't believe you have, since you did it in the grocery
store. I haven't stopped entirely. I danced tango more actively when I was in the Washington, D.C. community. But, in fact, on Maui, there's a very active tango community. And Laura Lee and I do, on occasion, go out and dance tango, but just not as actively as we could. Our lives are so full. It's really that. There's no lost love. I adore tango. I feel it's really a paradigm for life itself. It really thrives on connection. As the male lead, my job is first and foremost is to listen for the sound. You know, listen deep to hear the tango music, because in that very special music is direction for how then to lead in the dance. But then I have to lead in a way that gives the woman a lot of room as the follow to do her own thing. You know, to be a controlling lead is just abusive. And so we learn to listen deep and to lead in a way that gives our partner a lot of room to really shine. It's like she's the diamond and I'm just kind of the setting, is the idea.
So got you into tango?
What got me into it is I saw a demo of tango. The year must have been 1996, and I watched a couple dancing Argentine tango together. It was the first time I had ever seen Argentine tango, and that was the time, the mid-90s, that's when it was beginning to come on the scene. And by now, you know, it's all over the world. Now, are we 20 years later? No, 15 years later, you can go to any city in the world, and there will be, you know, any major city, and probably there will be a thriving tango community there.
And so what do you recommend? You recommend everybody should go tango?
Well, no. There are many. There's one path, many mountains, right? One mountain, whatever it is. There are many ways. The thing is, for me, life is so full of juicy opportunity that the biggest challenge I have in life is managing abundance, I would say. You know, there's so many ways to live here on Maui. There are so many different kinds of activities. My whole week, this coming week, when I look at what I have on the books there, it's like, oh, there's just so much. You know, we have a movie study group. I play Japanese taiko drumming. I'm doing 3 radio shows this week. I have poetry students tomorrow. I'm going to swim with the turtles on Wednesday afternoon. The days that, you know, I'll be swimming. It goes on and on. So how does one manage abundance and not get overwhelmed? What a challenge, huh?
Yeah, now, that's what I was going to ask you next. So do you feel overwhelmed occasionally, and how do you keep that balance?
I do at times get to the edge of feeling overwhelmed, and when I feel that coming on, I take that as a reminder that I need more quiet time. So, for instance, I might just take a time out and sit out on the bench out in the yard here where the animals are and just breathe and enjoy the landscape and enjoy the animals, for instance. Or I might go for a walk. But usually for me, the signal is that I need more personal time. I need to go a little bit more solitary, you know, sit quietly. Sometimes I am a writer, so sometimes for me that would be taking out my journal and a pen and just beginning to formulate a poem, or just, you know, let whatever wants to come out be written there. I used to do a practice called the daily pages of the same wall. What is it? The practice was to sit down in the morning and just write open-ended, not editing, you know, just let it all spill out onto the page for maybe 20 minutes or so, maybe a half an hour. And when you're done, just throw it away.
I so recommend that to the people who come to me. I'm so glad to hear you say that.
You know what I'm talking about.
It's so important for health.
Julia Cameron, I think, is the woman who has, you know, recommended these daily pages.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't it great? So we need times to clear, don't we, Helen? We just
right.
need to kind of reset. If we're talking computer language, we need times to reboot.
Right. I didn't ever know it was the name open-ended. I just would say to people, I discovered it because I happen to have been a person who had been abused as a child, and I discovered it in my healing that if I would get in a bad spot, if I would just sit and write and not try to censor my thoughts, eventually they would calm down and clear, and I would feel better and be closer to the truth that I really needed to get to. Because, you know, anybody that's had a problems in their life tend to hide a lot of things, and I learned that secrets made me sick, and so it was through that open journaling that I just peeled the onion.
Yeah, well, we have that in common. I mean, how wise you are and how wise anyone is to do that, to reboot. You know, and another way, I've always wanted to live by the ocean, and I never lived by the ocean until I moved to Maui 7.5 years ago. So another thing I do is I get in the water and I go out where the sea turtles are.
Mm.
And I hang out with them. And usually I know a spot where there's nobody else around. I just go, I know where the turtles are, and I just hang out with them. And what a, you know, being in the ocean with the beautiful light shining through and the shimmering coral and the connection with the turtles, I feel so blessed. And it's a beautiful way to reset, you know, my hard drive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. No, I love that.
The ocean is such a healer, and because of that, I mean, I'm carrying so much pain right now about this oil spill on the Gulf. This is about,
I don't know that I've ever felt so much grief and anger over anything, because it's all one ocean, the truth is,
right.
You know. And
right.
This is the beautiful, healing ocean, you know, and what in the world is going on, and what must these animals be thinking or sensing? I mean, who are these humans? Are they insane? You know?
Right.
I mean, it seems to be insane to treat the ocean this way.
Right.
And we are. This way, we are really bonkers.
And I totally agree.
Yeah.
I was unhappy when they drilled the first well in the ocean because I said they're not going to know how to stop it if they ever have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they made an educated guess, but that's all it was, and we found out it wasn't anything more than a guess.
Yeah. Well, you were precognitive then. You foresaw this. You know,
I have too much of that sometimes.
No. So, you know, it's not that I want to dwell on that, but I really, this is one of the, I would say, seminal events of my life is my response to what's happening there. And the photo, you know, the photographs, thank goodness people are seeing the photographs. At least it's out in, you know, in the news in a way that people can see there's faces on it.
Right.
But those beautiful turtles, like the Ridley turtles, they're already so endangered in the Gulf of Mexico, and Kemp's Ridley turtle, and just so many other species that it's
criminal.
It's criminal. And
it is.
Somehow this is part of why, and I think it ties in with health as consciousness, it's not just for me or for you. Uh-huh. It's for the, how can we raise the consciousness of humankind so we really soon.
Right.
It's almost overwhelming to contemplate how are we going to ever do this. But I have faith in the human heart. I think in the end, I do have faith in the human heart. Just somehow we must activate, open our connection with our hearts and come from there.
I also really emphasize that, again, it isn't just about us as we heal. We have to care about our neighbors. We have to care about our community. We have to care about our environment. We have to care about our carbon footprint, you know. And
it's not just about how long and healthy Dr. B lives or that Helen lives.
Right. You and I are so on the same wavelength.
I imagine that when we talked on the air that we would discover that. And interestingly, you and I haven't had an opportunity before this to have this conversation. So it's for the listeners, but also we're getting to know where each other is really living.
This is a blessing, a huge blessing for me.
Yeah.
You know, I know Maui doesn't have a lot of sidewalks. Are you still doing your inline skating?
Yes, a little bit. I brought the skates here. My sweetheart, Laura Lee, does quite a bit of inline skating. She's avid. And
where do you inline skate on Maui?
Where do we do it? Well,
on the ropes?
We like to start over at the Kalanoa Senior Center in Sprecklesville. If you start there, there's a path that goes behind the airport that hardly anyone is on.
Oh.
There's a side path you can take from that, and you end up at Kanaha Beach. So there's about a few miles of very nice trail there. Now, in Washington, D.C., I was pretty spoiled. I could go out the front door of my house, and if I wanted, I could skate for 20 miles in the parks there. So it's not quite like that. But like so many things, if you really want to do it, you can find a way. And so we like that trail, but it's not so good. And biking here is a little difficult, too, because I don't like to bike right on the roads.
Uh-uh.
And for a lot of reasons. One is the pollution coming from the cars, but the danger of it. So I do a lot of water sports. I also do Hawaiian outrigger canoeing very avidly. And I have paddled between all the major islands through the channels, even from Oahu to Kauai in a canoe, if you can believe that.
Wow. That's a paddle.
It is. It's 95 miles, and we went overnight. And I must say, I probably won't do it again. It was, if I knew what I was in for. Wow, that was quite an experience. But I'm an adventurer, and I like adventure partly because you go through these shifts of consciousness. You sometimes feel things and have awarenesses that you can only have if you put yourself in a new environment rather than the same old. So challenge myself.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges that I have because we have Joshy, and you know he's pretty fragile, so there's many things I can't do just because of his limitations.
Yes.
Which is fine. It's absolutely fine. And I always am asking the universe, okay, now how am I supposed to stretch?
Yes.
And that's why I try to encourage people. You may not be able to do inline skating like Dr. B, or you may not be able to swim with turtles like Dr. B, but there's always something there for you. And it's just being willing to open to the universe is my feeling.
Yes, that's so beautiful. I mean, it's the attitude of openness and appreciation for what we do have, right?
Right.
Each of us has the life we have, and if we look at it truthfully, there's always a lot to appreciate in it.
Oh, yes.
An old friend of mine once said, it's really good to look at the donut, not at the hole. You know, I mean, not that I'm for some of the kinds of donuts, I'm not saying, but it's metaphor, you know, of course.
I understand.
So if we can start from looking at, well, what's working here in this life? Well, what can we appreciate and kind of build from there? Because there's always a hole in the center, but I don't think we want to keep referencing that, or we'll create what we don't want.
not unless we want donut holes, which is also a problem. Yes.
I know what you mean. You mean the donut holes that are actually, they call them donut holes, but they're
right,
spheres.
Right. We can do that one.
Well, that's a novel way to look at it.
Yeah.
So even if it's on a pole, you can get a good deal.
That's absolutely right. Now, I know you've been a vegetarian since 69, and I'm sure that was because of your shifting towards more holistic eating. What made you shift to being a vegan?
Well, I would credit Laura Lee Blanchard with my becoming a vegan, because I didn't really up till then see the necessity of taking that step, like most people do. It seems really limiting. People say, well, why not eat eggs? And why, you know, what's wrong with cheese? And isn't yogurt good? And my health choices prior to becoming vegan were more health than ethically based. I made choices. I became vegetarian largely because, for health reasons. But I wasn't really that focused on the ethics.
Because of your smoking, or was there a different health reason? And I don't mean to get personal.
No, that was the smoking. That's right. I was still smoking then. That's right, the timing. But, I mean, there's a whole story with that about the last time I ever ate meat, and, you know, it was at a campsite. But anyway, I just really got that it wasn't appropriate for me to eat meat, but it wasn't for the animal's sake. I wasn't so concerned about the cow. I was just concerned about myself. And since meeting Laura Lee and being in the vegan community here on Maui, I've been taking a much more careful look at what's involved at bringing meat to people's plates. And, you know, factory farming is one of the horrendous things. It's so horrendous on many levels, including the way it creates greenhouse gases and harms the planet. I mean, that would be reason enough. But the abuse and the horror of slaughterhouses, you know, once I see that, and the shift to veganism is because milk cows are included in this, and hens that are kept in battery cages. You know, these animals are confined for their entire life to no space. They can't even walk around. And so it wasn't worth it to me anymore to eat products produced in that way. It just seemed completely inconsistent.
Well, let me ask you a question. What about the animals that are free range and live holistically their little animal lives?
That's relatively better. I certainly, you know, if the animals are truly free range, you know, say if people have their, you know, backyard chickens and they eat pigs from their chickens, that's fine. But I think in the marketing, I believe there's a lot of deception that eggs, for instance, are marketed as free range, when in fact they aren't. And free range, it doesn't really match up to the kind of idyllic idea we have of how, you know, hens just kind of walking around. I mean, if it's your own home, your own farm, you can have that happen. But there's so
many. Are you implying that they lie to us, Dr. B?
I'm inclined to say, I'll say this much. We live in a society where the ethic is primarily the truth has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I know. That really is true. I was actually being little bit sarcastic there.
No, you were. I mean, I get it. But whether we're talking politics or whether we're talking corporate marketing, or whether we're talking legal, you know, I mean, you win if you have a stronger lawyer. It's not so much about the truth. Right. I mean, you know, we could give some examples, but, you know, and to me it's very frightening. So the antidote to that is in our personal relationships, yours and mine and all the people that we interact with. We want to bring the truth fully into it as much as we possibly can to build from the grassroots level an ethic and a practice of truth. You know, I mean, this is
one of the... No, I totally agree. I'm just trying to figure figure in my mind. I personally, and this is just because I don't have enough, you know, I don't get out in society enough. I'm a little bit more closed in than some people, though I do try to stay very updated on the internet. I honestly thought the free range meant free range. I didn't realize I was being duped.
Well,
but I believe you. I believe you're probably right.
Yes, I'm not saying that you're always being duped. I'm just saying that there's a lot of things that were sold a bill of goods. And if you look at it more carefully, it's only maybe relatively true. And, you know, it's...
I don't like that relatively true. I like true.
That's the truth as I see it. I can only...
Yeah. Okay.
The truth as I've come to know it, and, you know, other people may have different opinions, but...
Because I know When I was growing up, we raised chickens, and they were all, well, they didn't run free in the yard, because if they did, the other animals would get them, but they had a huge yard that was theirs, and they would lay their pretty little eggs, and I have to tell you, at least half of those chickens were pets, you know, I mean, they were
pets.
They were pets.
Yeah, well, that's beautiful. I mean, that's free range.
Yeah.
But so often they will call, say, eggs free range. What they don't put is the little quotation marks for you around the free range. You know what I mean? The truth would be, it would be like, it means so-called free range. That if you really saw, I would think in many circumstances, you wouldn't really see what you would hope to see there.
Okay. Now, I know you do a lot of
work
with...
And the other thing is, they still, just to mention, they still get slaughtered after they, you know, they're still then killed off for food. You know, we live in a culture where people eat animals, and it looks completely normal to most people. To me, there's no necessity whatsoever to eat animals. It's unhealthy, and it's a practice that needs to stop if we're going to have a healthy society. That's a very radical idea, isn't it? I mean, people say eggs, you know. Well, ideally, yes.
Our son Joshua has been a vegan for at least 7 years now, and I honestly believe that's why he's still alive and very healthy.
How old is Joshua?
We got him when he was 2 months old, and he just turned 29. They said he wouldn't live past 4.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. And even
they told me he was going to be a vegetable, and now he, as he says, I'm a full salad.
Yeah, now he eats vegetables. That's right, full salad. but something, you know, I really believe in living life according to what I call callings. You know, we learn to listen within and to know what is a calling for us and what isn't. And it sounds like, you know, having this boy, adopting him, if that's correct.
Yes.
It was a calling, and it is, remains a calling. And when something's a calling, I don't know anything healthier you can do in your life than to... When something's a calling, go for it. You know, that's living to me.
That's exactly how I feel, and I try to explain to people. They'll say, I feel so sorry for you, or gee, you don't get to do things. And I'm like, you have no clue how blessed I am. You haven't got a clue. You know, it's just such a blessing because Joshua has been my teacher for 29 years, and he continues to teach me.
I believe it. You know, the experience you're having with Joshua, I can only imagine you wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, it's so... And it requires a lot of you, right?
But if you do it with the right spirit...
Parenting always requires a lot of us, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. We have to be willing to stretch it. If we're going to get stretched, by gosh, we're going to feel it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the attitude that you take toward parenting of Joshua... You know, it's similar to the attitude we take toward the animals. You know, we love them. We want to give them what's best for them. We want people to meet them on their terms. We want them to fulfill their true nature.
You're going to make it hard for me to ever eat anything that has eyes.
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's wonderful. No, I'm really glad. No, that's... As I say, I give Josh what I know is the healthiest thing for him, but do I give it to me? No. And it just blows my mind that I give him what I should be giving myself too, you know?
Are you ready to achieve your deepest dreams, enhance your healing, or offer your best to the world? Then visit us at www.findtoonyou.com. where we've been since 1998. As you search our website, you will find encouragement, inspiration, and amusing information. If you are ready for intuitive counseling, transformational coaching, or a personalized interactive guided imagery recording, send an email to helen@findtoonyou.com or call her at 877-469-5505, Extension 1.
I'd rather live on Maui and lose power than I would.
It's just one of the things that happens sometimes.
It's wonderful.
So it's a great example of how you never know what's coming next, do we?
No. Yeah, we'll talk about this on air. It's no problem.
Yeah.
All right. We are back on air, and Dr. B says we lost power on Maui.
I apologize for that, and it was a little glitch here power-wise.
I love it.
I'm glad that we're back. But I do think it's a great example, Helen, of how we just don't know in the next moment. You know, maybe Creator is just going to pull the plug on us sometime. In fact, it kind of happens with all of us, and sometimes completely when we don't know it's going to happen, right?
That's right. That's why we better live each moment to the hills, right?
Exactly. Precisely. And, you know, just living as if it's our last moment. Now, that's not an easy practice, but it's certainly something worth attending.
I think you live so much more full that way.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't succeed in doing it all the time, but I certainly do strive for it.
Yes. Yeah, nor do I. I'm not a lot of things I intend. I'm far from being a complete success. But I'm consistent with the intending. Anyway.
But I think that's because we're still in our human shell, and that spirit is still trying to break out, but that human shell every now and then goes squish.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we have to squish through. We have to push through the squish.
Push through the squish. There you go. That's very poetic. I love you. You should come to my class tomorrow. You'll like it. Poetry group.
I have to do it via Skype.
Yes. Yeah. My group are, they're all seniors.
Oh,
and, you know, part of why I facilitate poetry is because I love the written word and I love the art of poetry. But the other, as I mentioned earlier, is it's all connected with health. You know, when one really learns to bring their creativity powerfully forward and to find the voice maybe that was blocked inside, it's one of the healthiest things we can do, it seems to me.
So you go to the senior center and do the poetry?
I teach at the senior center, but what happens because of the budget in Hawaii, they ran out of money. They haven't come back anymore this calendar year.
Oh.
And students wanted to continue, so we now meet in a private home.
Okay.
With, you know, many of the group who were at the senior center meeting now in a private home because they wanted to continue, and we don't have those limits. And I do it as a fundraiser now for the sanctuary.
Oh, how wonderful. Now, I want you to give the name of your sanctuary, and I want people to know that in the future, we do want to have Laura Lee on so she can tell us all about the sanctuary.
Right.
What's the official name?
Yes. Let me tell it to you. And we have a beautiful website.
And you can get to it by my website.
Yes, thank you. That's right. You've linked. And if anybody wants to see what I look like or the animals... what this animal look like, or Laura Lee, or
right.
Just see, you know, the beautiful land here.
You can go to Fine-Tune You at the link. I'll just let you go, but you can go to Fine-Tune You and then go under the links and go under vegan, and then Laura Lee's sanctuary will be there. And now Dr. B is going to give you the actual name of the sanctuary and how to get there direct.
Yes, the name of the sanctuary is Leilani Farm Sanctuary, and it's named after the sanctuary's first resident donkey. Leilani. It's L-E-I-L-A-N-I, Leilani, which means heavenly flower in Hawaiian, farm sanctuary. So,
now, is it a .com, a .info,
a .org?
.org, see?
Yes,
now, that makes a difference.
We're a 501c3. We got our nonprofit status almost exactly a year and a half ago, so the federal government recognizes us as a 501c3.
That's wonderful.
Our website, LeilaniFarmSanctuary.org.
That is absolutely wonderful. I am just so excited about that. Now, we're going to talk about that later, so we're not going to go into it in great detail
on
this show. I would like you very much to talk more, just because I know there's so many people out there that struggle with it. I love how you talk about the different forms of meditation fitting personalities.
Yeah.
Could you give people some tips?
Oh, about meditation?
And the fact that everybody doesn't have to do it exactly the same, different ideas that they maybe could approach it.
Yes, you know, the most important thing is for a person to find a form of meditation that they will actually do. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. For instance, there are forms of meditation that I've practiced that are walking meditations, where you just slow down the pace of your walking to the point that you start noticing things. In other words, you're not walking to get anywhere. You're just moving and noticing what's around you, for instance.
Wow.
And, of course, there are many forms. The meditations, just the forms that are most familiar to people are forms of sitting meditation. And it's fine to sit in a chair for most people. You know, sitting cross-legged is not something that many can do or want to do, although if you're a yogi, you can, or a yoga student. But I, for instance, I'm part of a meditation group on Maui that meets on Saturday mornings, and about 10 of us sit around in a circle, and we have a leader, and he usually gives a little suggestion. And for instance, this time he said, here's what I'd like people to do for the next 20 minutes. I'm just going to sit and imagine that you're a mountain. You know, just become a mountain. Just sit quietly and imagine that you're like Haleakala or something like that. Another meditation, he said, we're going to have a coasting meditation. I'm just going to sit for 20 minutes. And all you need to do is just feel how easy it is to just coast along. But many forms of meditation have to do with focusing on the breath. For instance, a very simple one would be, you begin to focus on your breath, and as you breathe in, you say the word to yourself silently, you know, in your own inner world, breathing the words, breathing in. And then as you breathe out, you say the words to yourself, breathing out. Breathing in, breathing out. And for people who like help with meditation, one of the ways to do that is, and this is a little plug for my CD, in the form of a CD. I created a CD, and I mentioned in the year 2000, called Dances with Breath, Peaceful Steps for Dances with Breath, Simple Steps for a Peaceful Life. And on it, there are 9 different tracks, and each one of them guides you into a state of meditation and relaxation. So people can just put on the CD, and for instance, if it's track 3, they just play track 3, and my voice actually would guide them into that. Because for some people, it's really helpful to have a leader guiding them throughout the meditation.
Right.
In the case of the group I'm in, we have a leader who gives a very tiny bit of direction at the beginning, and then we sit in silence for 20 minutes together and then have some conversation about what came up.
Wonderful. And you do that once a week, or you do that every day?
I do it once a week with the group, and then many mornings, not every morning, because some mornings I'm up so early, like 4:30 in the morning to get to the radio station on Wednesday. But most mornings, I would say, I have my own practice of quiet sitting, and very often one or more of the cats will come and sit in my lap and join me in the meditation. It's very nice to have a lap cat or a lap dog, because they, the ones who like to meditate are often very good at settling. In fact, cats are beautiful teachers of meditation. You know how they are. They can be so present.
Right.
So
right.
Beautifully present. So there are a lot of forms of meditation, and our minds are so busy, all of our minds are so busy, that it does take practice to, in a sense, to use this term again, to reboot the, you know, the mind.
Right.
To give the mind a break from all that chatter so that it can, some new awarenesses can come in. It's interesting in meditation, sometimes inspirations come up, because when the mind is quiet, then you can see what was there all the time. And it can be very creative sometimes.
Right.
Very bizarre, but whenever it is, it's a discovery.
And no, it's very accurate. Joshua and I meditate every morning.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And so you and Joshua have a regular practice together. What is your meditation like, may I ask?
We use a mantra because of Joshua. You know, it's easier for him. And then we always have a white noise in the background because his bed is electronic.
Yes.
So we have to learn how to meditate and be still amongst noise. But it's become a white noise for us.
Yes.
And we've learned how to tune into it that way.
Yes.
Every now and then, and some mornings he's able to be up in his chair, which is not white noise. Then we shut the bed down and we say, oh, it's so peaceful this morning.
Oh, isn't contrast wonderful? I mean,
it is.
We can appreciate the peacefulness so much better if we've had to have it a different way.
Right. And it's absolutely wonderful because both meditations are extremely positive and beneficial to both of us. He was having serious problems with his blood pressure and his heart rate, and with the meditation, we've managed to get them down very close to normal range.
Isn't
which
that
can
wonderful?
It is.
And you know, as I do, that there's a lot of scientific research that substantiates, for instance, how meditation can help lower blood pressure.
I know. And if you stop and think, a kid who's as medically fragile and Josh gets benefits, what about a person who isn't medically fragile? Their benefits should shoot through the roof.
Yes.
You know?
I suppose. But it does take, you know, like you and Joshua have, it takes a choice to make it important enough to do this practice. In your case, every day, which is wonderful.
Well, it just doesn't feel like a complete day if we haven't meditated.
Yes.
You know, there's the occasional day that we miss, but that day it's like, ooh, we just don't feel quite right. Like something's out of sync.
That's a very positive, I don't like to say positive addiction, but a very positive passion.
Yes.
I would call it passion for meditation, because you develop such a taste for the experience you have when you practice it. You know it's worth it.
Right, the peacefulness. Well, Dr. Berry, it looks like our time is up, and I can't thank you enough. This has been the most amazing hour. I want to get you back.
Oh, thank you. As I appreciate that reflection. You know, like you, I'm just being who I am, right, in this world, and so are you.
I absolutely love who you are.
Yeah, well, likewise. And the only way this world is going to be a transformed place is if each of us kind of get what it is that we're doing here and do it in the very best way that we can, you know? I mean, we all have part of this, and we all really need to be, especially in these times, going for it in a big way. And I see you doing that. And in fact, this program is one example of you doing that, certainly.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I thank you so much. And people, thank you so much. That's our show for tonight. I hope you enjoyed it half as much as I enjoyed it. And I thank you for taking time to connect and for being part of Fine Tune You.
Right.
Thank you for holding the sacred space of light, love, purpose, and intention. It's always great to connect with all of you. So until the next time, may the light of love surround and support your body, your thoughts, your emotions, and your spirit. May you choose to immerse yourself in the loving guidance of your spiritual source. May the power of love watch over each moment of your day. And remember, wherever you are, love exists. I look forward to seeing each of you next Saturday or Sunday when we'll continue to fine-tune you. Aloha and good night.
You have been listening to Fine-Tune You with Helen. We hope you'll return next week to continue our discussion on living holistically in a messy life. As you go through this week, remember, you are not a human being going through a temporary spiritual experience. You are a spiritual being going through a temporary human experience.